the OTB Podcast Network.
Right, Daniel Harris is with us to talk through some of the most magnificent Fergie outbursts and speeches. Daniel, good morning.
Hiya.
So this is from the United Rewind page. This is your podcast, nostalgic Manchester United podcast. And if you haven't gone through them yet, now is the time to do it, because the United Rewind Twitter account has tweeted basically a brilliant thread of magnificent Fergie outbursts and speeches. And we're going to start here with the greatest of them all.
United. I mean, this isn't what you needed, really. You needed the result, but you didn't need extra time, 10 men, a real battle like this.
Look, who's to know what's going to happen if we go Gary? It could all blow up in our face at the end of the day, but can you forget moments like this?
No.
Our supporters have been talking about that for years. The players have been talking about that for years. That's what football's about, trying to reach peaks and climaxes to a season, which we're doing at the moment. We're in a final. We've got something in the bank for ourselves. Now we go and try and win this league now.
It's the list of unbelievable moments here, Daniel. It does seem like the list is completely endless when it comes to great Fergie confrontations and encounters with journalists.
Well, when you kind of watch them all back, it's hard to understand like the extent to which he dominated English football. Like, there's one that I put up where someone's wound him up in a press conference, and as that press conference is going on, he's muttering with the press officer to get that newspaper man banned for the next press conference. Is he coming on Friday? And he's not even waiting to assert the power. He's literally dealing with it right there and then. And like some of the goings over that he hands out, you don't really see very much of that anymore. But Fergie's, I mean, obviously success was a big part of it, but also it's force of personality and like balls ultimately that he was prepared to go there. And because United were good, he pretty much held all the power. But that one you just played, which I guess is my favourite, is not really about that. The reason why I love that is because, not because he's asked a silly question and he makes the person asking the question look silly, which he does, but it's the way that he encapsulates what football is about as a supporter. Like, no supporters sitting there when your team's just won an FA Cup semi-final in legendary style thinking, oh, we've got a few too many games here. Like, football's about the moments that you remember with your friends, with your family, whoever it is you go to the game with. And we're sitting here, that happened in 1999, we're sitting there in 2021 and we are still talking about it now. And Fergie understood that at the time, and the way that he delivered it with such emphatic certainty transmutes to his players and transmutes to supporters, where they think that anything is possible, and it turned out that anything was possible.
Talking of transferring that to players, let's talk about Johnny Evans here, because the view here from the sideline of a game against AC Milan is pretty amazing. Fergie not happy with Johnny Evans. What was it about Johnny Evans that magnetized him so much to Fergie?
So I guess I have a particular relationship to this one, because I was in Milan for that game and I got lost. And you know, you occasionally have those moments where you suddenly come to and you think, oh, I'm not really sure what's been going on for the last couple of hours. I don't know. Maybe you don't, but that occasionally happens. And that happened to me. And I came to and I realised that I was in the home end and I'd lost my mates. And what actually happened there was United scored the first goal and then Johnny Evans gives one away. And Fergie, obviously, as you see, totally loses it with him. And I think what people always said about Fergie was that he only ever lost it with the players he knew could take it. And sometimes he lost it with a particular player when he wasn't actually that annoyed with them, but he was trying to show something to the other players. So, for example, Nani was known to be quite sensitive. And so he would never lose it with Nani. He'd lose it with someone else so that Nani would get the message that what Nani was doing wasn't right. So losing it with Evans like that, it may be that he was just furious with Evans and it was indiscriminate, but it may also be that he was vexed with quite a few people and thought that Evans could take it. But what happened at the end of that game was, actually, I ended up having to watch the second half of that game. Well, I actually left thinking the game was over and it turned out that it was in fact only half time. And I ended up watching that game supervised by a few stewards. and lost it when Rooney scores two goals and United win 3-2. Totally lost it, running up and down in front of the home fans with my arms in the air, screaming like a banshee, with like three or four stewards trailing in my wake. And not sure how I avoided things turning hairy, but we all hugged each other at the end. It was very nice. But yeah, I do still have a particular relationship to that Johnny Evans one. But yeah, I guess I should probably add that, like, I'm not catatonic or anything. Drink had been taken, I think.
Have you been back to the San Siro since today? Did they recognise you?
No, I don't think United have been back to the San Siro since. Yes, they have actually. They have been back when they played Inter, but different crowd.
Right, let's get back to some more Alex Ferguson in a press conference, I think. So this is great stuff. It's a pre-match speech from Ferguson before facing Liverpool and Steve McManaman.
Go back 3 years ago, how we lost the league. We lost the league at Anfield by not listening to that instruction about McManaman.
It's the players, the problem. They're quite happy not to change. And when I first came to the club, I said to the players, I'm not going to change, by the way. There's no question about that. You will need to change, or they won't be there. And that's what happens, you see. The manager has to make his impact.
And they're given Ince the license just to go and attack without any defensive duties. But if he tries to bully you, fucking enjoy it. Don't let him attempt to bully you. Right? You just make sure you're ready for him tomorrow. And that's all you need to worry about him. It's fucking big time, Charlie, but it's against fucking men, am I right? And that's all you need to worry about him. Is he going to do Redknapp? That is a problem for them, by the way. We get the ball transferred into these areas here. I don't think they have a chance against us. I don't think they have a chance what yous have got. Any questions? You happy with that? All right? Right, okay. Let's go.
What documentary is this, Daniel?
Pardon me?
Which documentary is this?
This is the funny thing. So this was a doc. The game in question where he's talking was before they played Liverpool at home at the end of 97-98. What happens in that game? United end up drawing 1-1. Michael Owen gets sent off hacking Ronnie Johnson, who was never quite the same again. And then in his autobiography, writes that he was just in a bad mood that day. And funnily enough, it was kind of strange that he got away with it when you remember what happened to Keane for his autobiography when he talks about Haaland. But anyhow, what I love about this one, obviously, there's just like the content. But what's brilliant about this is the way that he delivers the speech. There's a couple of questions. Am I right? Like, he's always challenging his players and he's asking them to ask questions of himself. And then the positivity that he tells them, that he sends them out with, is that they haven't got a chance against you. He tells them what they have to do to win. And he's so emphatic in his certainty that they're going to win. And because he always does win, the players are able to feed off that level of confidence. Like, he's not spending too long talking about what Liverpool might do with the ball, a little bit on McManaman, but then the rest of the time he's denigrating them. But it was a little bit sad, this one, because what actually happened, this game was shown, I think it was the night before, Wednesday night this programme was shown in 99, August or September 99. And the next night, United played Liverpool at home. It was a Thursday night, which was very unusual at the time, that United were playing on Thursday nights. Not so unusual since Fergie left. But the whole of Old Trafford ends up calling Paul Ince a big-time Charlie, because they've just seen Fergie calling that on the telly. So the whole of Old Trafford's going, Charlie, what's the score? And all that kind of thing. And that was a bit sad, really, because Paul Ince was an unbelievable player for United and doesn't actually get the credit he deserves, partly because he played quite early on in the Premier League era, partly because Roy Keane came next, who was just a little bit better, but also because Ince went to Liverpool. And in some ways, you look at it and think, well, Ince didn't have that much choice. Fergie booted him out, didn't really want to go to Inter, but Fergie kicked him out. And then when he wanted to come back, United had an option they said no to, and Liverpool were the best club available to him, and he was angry with United at the time. So I guess it sort of made sense that he went to Liverpool to him. Didn't obviously make that much sense at the time. And he comes back to Old Trafford, and he's got the whole of Old Trafford going, Charlie, what's the score? When he's given incredible service to United. He was the best midfield player in the country from about 91 to about 95. And then United go to Anfield towards the end of the season, and Ince scores an equaliser in the last minute and in front of the cop and goes absolutely wild. And a lot of United fans never really forgave him for that. But personally, I just think that he was an unbelievable player. But the way that Fergie just like absolutely takes him apart there on television, knowing that it's on television, is just like so cold and ruthless. And yeah, that's one of the reasons I love that one.
Daniel, Paul Ince is an interesting one too. I mean, when he left West Ham to go to Manchester United, he got real hate from West Ham fans about the way that he engineered that move. As you mentioned, he had no problem celebrating in the kind of period before players not celebrating against their old club. There's something very much about Paul Ince, the fact that he didn't seem to care about offending fans of teams that he previously played for.
I don't know if it's that he didn't care about offending fans of teams he played for. It's just that he wholeheartedly competed for whoever he was playing for. So the West Ham thing was, it was a long time ago now and I was young, but I think there was a medical situation. So he thought he was going to United and then there was an issue with the medical. So he ended up posing in the United kit before he'd actually left West Ham. And that was what wound up the West Ham fans. I mean, I think that it would be fair to say that people who were there when he first went back to West Ham, there was particularly a game where, again, in 94, where, again, he equalises right at the end and it's a 2-2 draw for United. I would say that there were things about Paul Ince that some of the home fans didn't like that didn't have that much to do with what shirt he was wearing, actually. The level of abuse he was getting was quite a lot more poisonous than that. But Paul Ince is, he's not a shrinking violet. There's Fergie, one of the other quotes that I put in that thread is when Fergie says, there are no wimps in my team. No one ever called Paul Ince a wimp. Although I say that, but when United got walloped 4-0 in the Nou Camp, Fergie lost it with him and called him a bottler in the changing room and then went in his face and told him he was a bottler. And that was probably around the time he started thinking that actually you might get rid of him. But yeah, Paul Ince was not a bottler. And Paul Ince was not a shrinking violet either.
Right, let's hear from Alex Ferguson at halftime in the dressing room.
The tempo are going. The other thing is, some of the passing is fucking scratchy. Get the passing fluid. Good touching the ball. You don't always need it to pass it first time. You tried it in the once or two in 15, 20 minutes, and you lost it. Take a touch in the ball. Now look at that and the point of back four. There's the places to play.
Most managers can earn their money just in a half-time team talk alone because of it changes the state of play and you then can go on to win a match. And we've done it many times at Old Trafford. It's an important time now at half-time, preparing what you think should be said.
Right now, get yourself sorted, OK? Come on. No easing up. Come on now. Listen, don't let yourselves down here now. Don't even fucking attempt it.
which game is this from?
I don't actually know what game this was, but what I love about this, and it's like, the thing about Fergie is that he is a master of simple rhetoric. He doesn't mess around with fancy words, but what he says, he chooses his words so carefully, and he's always challenging the players. So here he says, yeah, no, he's not. Come on now. So that's, but then what you remember is what he says after that. Don't let yourselves down here now. Don't even fucking attempt it. And it's really like, it's a challenge. And he's reminding them that if they do let themselves down here, then they're going to have to deal with him. And it's just the way that he delivers the line, so simple and so memorable. And just, I mean, I know that people in football swear, so that's just part of the vernacular and part of the way that people speak. But the way that he deploys his swearing in order to elevate the rest of his sentence, because he's saying, like, don't let yourselves down here now. Don't even fucking attempt it. No one is going to attempt to let themselves down because you either do or you don't. Like, it's not like I'm going to try and let myself down here and let's see if I can. But somehow the way that he orders the words become extremely memorable and extremely pointed because he is basically, he's telling his players, you have the option here of being a wimp, of being soft. Is that how you want to look at yourself? I mean, we don't have the tape of some of his press conferences here either. Some of his other team talks, like the most famous one he gives is when United played Barcelona in the Champions League in 99 and they're 1-0 down at half-time. Now, well, the last time I watched that game through, you could see that tactically there were a couple of things he might have adjusted. He didn't really get in for any of that. What he said was, in 45 minutes' time, you're going to walk past that trophy and you're not going to be able to touch it. And when it got to 90 minutes and Gary Neville turns up on the left wing, that's what Gary Neville was thinking about. You're going to get to that trophy and you're not even going to be able to touch it. He's getting involved with them much more on an emotional level than on a football level. It's the same in 2008. The speech that he famously gives is he talks about where all the players have come from. Owen Hargreaves has grown up in Canada and Patrice Evra has got numerous siblings and from Senegal. And all the players have come, Nani's from Cape Verde, Anderson from Brazil. The players have come from all over the world to come and play for Manchester United and to build this family to go and try and win the European Cup. And that's what the players are thinking about. And that's the thing that develops the kind of the closeness in the squad and the ability to win when things, when it looks lost, and to find that extra energy. And that was really Fergie's genius. I mean, obviously he was a football genius. He wasn't a tactical genius, but he was a genius for understanding what a good player was and what a good team needed. But the real genius was the human resources genius, that he understood how to get people going. And that's what he's doing here. Like, don't let yourself down here. Listen to me. Don't let yourself down here. Don't even fucking attempt it. Like, I mean, it's a threat. But it's not. It's also a kind of compliment, because they're listening to it and they know that they're not even going to fucking attempt it, because that's who they are and that's why they're there.
This next clip from Ferguson, he's sticking the boot into Leeds here, is what sparked the infamous Kevin Keegan rant. Have a look.
How do you assess Leeds United? I mean, I'm saying myself, these guys have put their manager in trouble, these players. And after seeing that tonight, I can only say they're cheating the manager. That's the only way I can think of it. Why are they not up the top six? I just don't understand it. They're good players, aren't they? And if they produced effort like that, they would be the top six. But of course, you think for some of them it's more important to get a result against Manchester United to stop them winning the league than anything else. Which to me is, they're cheating their manager. That's all it is. And of course, when they come to Newcastle, you wait to see the difference.
This is just where the psychological warfare comes into play then, Daniel, and there was no one better.
Yeah, so what's happened in that game is United are playing Leeds. Leeds are having a terrible season. I think partly, maybe if he was mates with Howard Wilkinson, so there's maybe a bit of that there. But what's happened is Mark Beeney gets sent off at Old Trafford really early on. And it was the days before sub-goalkeepers, so Lucas Radebe goes in goal. And Leeds hold out for the majority of the game until Roy Keane scores. So Fergie obviously wants to make sure that they produce the same level of effort against Newcastle. I'm not really sure why Kevin Keegan got so furious about that, because it felt at the time, I mean, I remember the interview at the time, felt quite standard. Make sure you try that hard in your next game against our title rivals. I mean, that seemed like quite a reasonable thing to say. But I guess that Keegan could feel it slipping away, and he knew that it was on top. So, and Keegan being Keegan, he was unable to control himself. Whereas with Fergie, the rage that you see in press conference situations is not because he's still furious about something. It's because he thinks that that's the best thing to do. It's calculated. Whereas Keegan is losing it. And that's, I think, the difference. With Fergie, like, you might see him lose it on the touchline, and that is because he's losing it. He's got temper. But the stuff you see once he's had a chance to compose himself is different. Like when United are losing in the new camp in 99, just before they score those two goals, he says, like, he's trying to get a hold of himself to make sure that he's magnanimous when he has to go and give his interview in defeat. And that's literally not what Keegan is doing there. Keegan is unable to control himself and is furious. And that's the difference with Fergie, is you very rarely saw him speak when he was steam-powered like that. You saw him do it on the touchline, but at this point, he's doing whatever he thinks is best for United to get the next result.
Couple of more to get to here, Daniel. The second last one here is a great one. Here's Ferguson on dropping Jim Leighton in goals for the 1990 FA Cup final replay.
And after the game against Crystal Palace, the first game, the lad was shattered. He really was shattered. In the dressing room after that game, he was shattered. Everyone knew that. But you still got to make the decision. And the easy decision was to play him again. The hard decision, win is a cup.
This is interesting. This obviously is a very famous decision to drop him for this replay, knowing the impact that this would have on the player and knowing how tough a decision it was. And also speaking about it, coming out and saying this is how tough the decision was afterwards. Like, this is one of a number of things that Ferguson got right during his career.
Jim Leighton never forgave him and still feels bitter about it, I think, now. But, I mean, obviously what happened proved Fergie right to some extent. I mean, who knows, maybe Leighton would have come in and kept a clean sheet as well. But let's see if he came in and kept a clean sheet. And Leighton had been dreadful for quite some time. He made a terrible mistake. I think it was maybe against Southampton, and he never quite recovered from that. But this, what I love about this is just Fergie's just so simple. He says, yeah, the easy decision was to play him again. The hard decision was the cup. And he was ruthless. He never shied away from a hard decision. But more than that, he always made positive decisions. And then he would stick to it. I remember a different interview where he said, why should I go to my bed with a doubt? So once he'd made his decision, he put that decision away and he moved on to the next one because, I mean, in a sense, he's protecting his mental health because being a football manager, never mind manager in Manchester United, is an unbelievably stressful endeavour. So I think the way he looked at it was you have to keep making tough decisions all the time, but you can't dwell on them because if you dwell on them, you become indecisive and it's also just not good for you as a person. Why should I go to my bed with a doubt? Why should I not be able to sleep because of something to do with football? In the same way that when the football was over, Fergie wasn't like Arsene Wenger, who would be obsessing, like, go home, watch the Belgian second division, see if there are any players. Like, when Fergie signed, say, Nemanja Vidic, he wasn't sitting there watching Spartak Moscow play and thought, oh, that Vidic is good. He had scouts who he trusted, and he'd be sitting there at home watching the horses or the History Channel or drinking his wine or whatever, all the various things he did to relax, because he was a man of the world, Fergie. He is a man of the world. And he understood that there were other things going on in the world that he should take notice of, that I think he brought to his football and to his management and to the way that he related to people. And he was able to switch off, which meant that when he switched on, you got the best of him. So with this one, yeah, like he wasn't scared of making the hard decision, but he made it. And then you moved on.
Daniel, as well, when it comes to dropping Leighton, obviously there's a certain amount of emotional attachment around the decision he has to make here. This is one of his, you know, first marquee signings when he becomes the Manchester United manager. This is a player who he's previously worked with success in Aberdeen. He's known for a long time. It's not an easy call to be able to say, right, I'm going to drop a goalkeeper who I'd put a lot of faith in before and make this decision just before. What really felt at that time, if United hadn't won the FA Cup, Ferguson could well have been sacked.
Well, I think that is probably what made it less of a hard decision, because you've got to take the emotion out of it at that point. You're not worrying about your attachment to Leighton. You're worrying about your attachment to your job. And so you're thinking, what is most likely to win the cup and keep me in that job? And so I think there is a difficult decision to drop the goalkeeper, because if it goes wrong, you look an absolute Charlie. But then the goalkeeper's made himself look an absolute Charlie in the first game. So when you actually weigh it up, it probably wasn't that difficult decision in some ways, apart from the fact that it attracts attention. Because once you've decided that something's the right decision, if you're not scared of the abuse that you might get if it goes wrong, then if you genuinely think it's the right decision, then I guess, even though he says it was the hard decision, once you've made the hard decision, and I think this is true in life as well, once you've made the hard decision, if you know it's the right decision, it becomes not only the easy decision, but it becomes the only decision.
Let's get on to the last one, Daniel. Talk about calling it. Here's Alex Ferguson talking about the potential importance of goal difference after that 6-1 defeat to Manchester City in October 2011.
30 minutes of the game, we were outstanding, dominated the game. Of course, the first goal was a Boches, but yeah, that's retrievable, that situation. The sending off, certainly, that was a killer for us. And after that, we kept attacking, which, you know, in the nature of Manchester, did fine. But when it went down to 4-1, you should just say, well, we've had a day. We kept attacking, full-backs forward, and they were attacking with 3-2. It was crazy, crazy football.
What do you do when you get to that stage, though? If it's 3 or 4, keep going, trying to save with some pride, or try and keep the score down?
I thought with the experience we got with Rio Ferdinand and Patrice Evra, would have realised that. But they just kept attacking. And it's okay pointing with the history book, but sometimes it has to be common sense about it.
Did you just put it down as a bad day at the office?
It was a bad day, there's no doubt about that. It was our worst ever day. But in the nature, you know, we'll come back for that, you know. So challenges, but the most thing that concerns me most was the goals for and against now. It was 10 goals of difference today. That was a big blow for us, because you never know, goal difference may count. Last season it was in our favour. Most years it's in our favour, but at this moment in time it's not.
And it could have been more.
Yeah, of course. We were so open, we kept attacking. Unbelievable.
Wow, I didn't realise, Daniel, that he stuck the boot into Ferdinand and Evra in such a way about them continuing to attack in that game.
Yeah, I mean, well, the thing that he never slagged off his players, it's not true. Like, he just did it when he thought it was necessary. But I think this chiding here is almost friendly in the sense that I feel like he's sort of proud that they kept attacking, even though it went very wrong. He is sort of proud of the way that they kept attacking. And that's the thing here. They've just been gubbed 6-1 home in the derby. But the positivity and the upbeat nature of that interview is, again, like, it's calculated. Like, he's not feeling like that. He's probably absolutely furious, but he's able to control himself because he needs to present a particular face to the press. And what he needs to do is he needs to do the thing that is most necessary to go and win the next game. And what actually happens in the next game is United go and win the next game. They're away to Everton, which is not the kind of game you particularly want after that, but they do then go and win. And it's that level of positivity after what he says is the worst day of his career. But you wouldn't get that from his demeanour, and it doesn't therefore give the players an excuse to go and feel sorry for themselves or to lose any confidence. He just talks about the fact that they've kept attacking, which is sort of what he wants from them. But instead of just settling to lose 3-1, because what happened was, I think Johnny Evans gets sent off, and I think at 3-0, Fletcher scores. I think it's 3-0, Fletcher scores a brilliant goal. And at that point, they go and chase the game. And then once they concede again, they forget to stop chasing the game. And so it's not the most terrible of crimes. And I think that that's sort of what Fergie's telling them there, that they need to be more sensible, but not that he is ashamed of them or ashamed of the result, but that they just, they need to be a bit more practical. And then the challenge is now to come back and sort it out. And that's, I mean, they almost do it, but then they falter at the end, but they get pretty close. And then that has quite a lot to do with him.
It's a brilliant thread, Daniel. At United Rewind is where you want to go on Twitter to check it out. We don't have time to chat about what the last couple of days have entailed for Manchester United, but I'm sure we'll catch up with you again next week. Daniel Harris, thanks a million.
No worries, guys. See you again.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.